It's my great pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Judith Orloff. She's written a wonderful book, Emotional Freedom. She's written many other books that have been bestsellers, this is just one more, but it's a fantastic book. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at UCLA, where she also has a clinical practice. She teaches. She does workshops internationally. She's been seen on almost every big TV show there is, and I hear she's on two more now here in the Bay Area. She's been on the Today Show, on CNN, been in USA Today, and in Oprah Magazine, and many, many other things. One of the things about her is that she is an integrative psychiatrist, meaning she looks at the mainstream, as she should, because there's a lot of great wealth in that, but also looks beyond it into intuition medicine, which is a fantastic field that's untouched by most people in conventional practice. She looks at the role of spirit in healing. And she really goes beyond integrative psychiatry, in my opinion, to something that's called integral psychiatry. And I don't think she uses that word in her book, but I think it's a word that really applies to how she looks at things holistically. And by that, I mean she looks not only at body, mind, and emotion and spirit, but she looks at how what we do in our lives is integrated into everything that there is in our social life, in our business life, and at every level, whether it be local, national, global, and universal. So it's my great pleasure to introduce you, my good friend, Judith Orloff.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm glad to be here. And thank you, Lynn, for that beautiful introduction. You know, you meet special people, angels along the way in human form. Special people. Angels in human form, do you know what I mean? People who come into your life, he's one of them for me. A very, very special. All right, well, we have a short time tonight, so let's make the most of it. I'm going to be talking about emotional freedom and what that is. All right, I'm a psychiatrist, and I have 14 years of medical training, and I combine traditional medicine and everything I've ever learned in traditional medicine with intuition, spirituality, and appreciation of subtle energies in something I call energy psychiatry. All right, and so it's an integrative or integral or whatever combination word that you want to use, because I believe that in order to heal, we have to integrate every single form of wisdom we ever see in our lives. And it could be from traditional medicine or non-traditional. And to me, I don't have a preference. But what I do feel very strongly about is that when I see patients is that I listen with my mind and I also listen with my intuition so that I'm able to really give a prescription for my patients that's unique to each person. There is no such thing as a generalization when it comes to healing. It's all unique to the person in the moment that they're experiencing, whatever there is that they're experiencing. And as far as the PDR goes, or you know, anything that talks about side effects or diagnosis, the DSM-4, which is the Bible of the American Psychiatric Association, with every psychiatric diagnosis known to man so far, although they're revising it, you know, where they say you're depressed, so you should have lack of appetite or insomnia or low self-esteem or suicidal ideation. And they have a list. And if you fit into that list, then that's your category, you see. And the problem with that, you know, it can be a basis for something, just as an orientation, but no person could ever fit into a box like that. It's impossible. And you might be depressed, and you might be depressed, but it's a totally different configuration of forces involved. And so I'm very against generalizing, you know, when it comes to healing, because you can't. And that tendency to lump people together is very destructive, I think, because it stops you from seeing in the moment what's going on with an individual or yourself. So when you're involved with traditional medicine, I think you need to just get the good things out of it, but realize also the limitations, all right? And the limitations are that, you know, traditional medicine usually makes diagnosis and treatment based on the linear mind, all right? And the linear mind is A plus B equals C. It's analytic. It's making sense out of things intellectually, putting facts together so that they can be helpful to others. And that's, you know, extremely meaningful, extremely meaningful. However, it's only a fraction of the story. And if you only see things with your linear mind, you're going to be missing out on, you know, so much of reality that exists beyond that. And so with traditional medicine, they don't teach you about the other side, usually, although it's sort of changing. It's changing a little bit, and certainly in the last 10 years since I've been out speaking and so forth, the environment is changing. It's becoming more positive, but there's still, you know, a lot of people who are entrenched in the world of the mind. And what it sometimes takes is for them to go through a health crisis or for their loved ones to go through a health crisis for them to open up. It takes something radical, crisis as opportunity. So hopefully you don't have to wait for that. No, but I believe each path is exactly as it should be, so people open up when it's the right time. But I hope as a result of this talk, you know, something in you can open even more than it's open. Maybe you're totally open now, but to be even more open than that, to possibilities and intuition, which is the still small voice inside that will tell you the truth about things that isn't linear, that you sense when you're receptive. You don't go after it. You're receptive and you're open to information that comes in. Sight, smell, sound, imagery, dreams, senses of energy. It's a different form of processing information than a linear mind. All right, two entirely different ways of accessing knowledge. All right, so when I'm talking about emotional freedom, I'm talking about using the mind, but also using the intuition to interpret the many experiences you go through in your life and find the deeper meaning of it. Because the linear mind, when you're going through depression, when you're going through a crisis, when you're going through an anxiety attack, it will always say, I hate this, I want to get out of it. I want this to be over. That's what the linear mind says. So, you know, be ready for that. But the intuition, if you're able to even for a second go inside and sense the deeper meaning of whatever it is you're going through, and that's exactly what I'm talking about here, you will see what you need to grow. You will see why this is given to you and the greater meaning of why you're going through something so that you can grow as a person spiritually, intuitively, psychologically, whatever. I mean, I am a big believer in trusting the integrity of all that life brings you. And I mean all. It's hard, and the linear mind doesn't want it, you know, half of it, if it's difficult, but still it's yours. You see, and with emotional freedom and with intuitive healing, I always look at things from the beginning to the end, meaning when you're born, the years you're given here, and the time you're going to go. All right, because that's an appointment everyone has to keep, is when you go. You can't avoid it, you see, but traditional medicine is so death phobic, they don't even want to talk about it. And when a patient dies, they look at it as a failure. That's the linear mind. Just notice that. That's the linear mind. Intuition knows about cycles. It knows about nature. And it knows about the rightness of transitions and the inevitability, not in a morbid sense, but just to get an overall picture. As most people walk around not aware of their bodies, they're in their, hello, they're in their, can they sit on the floor? Here's a seat. They're not aware of their bodies. They live from the neck up. And they forget about the fact that they're going to die. All right. And the reason I think it's important to know that, although I know it evokes fear in people because they haven't resolved this, but it's something really to grapple with. The importance of it is that it gives you a clear vision of what you have. And it allows you to experience the moment and what you're given in this life to grow in a much deeper way. All right. And you never know what's going to happen in life. What you're given is what we have now together. This moment is it. This is it, and now it's gone. You see, and now we have this one and this one. But if you could bring yourself in your body's 100% present, whatever it is you're going through, whether you're sitting in this room, whether you're going through anxiety, whether you're upset about your mother or your father or a relationship, whatever it is you're going through, emotional freedom is framing it in the sense of how can this experience help me to grow, as opposed to being in a victim mode. Now, why is this happening? It's unfair. This loss, this horrible loss of my beloved. How could this happen? This is unfair. How am I ever going to get through it? Now, how am I going to survive the loss of a child? How am I going to survive an illness? How am I going to survive a depression? You know, how am I going to survive, you know, financial struggles? You know, all of this, you know, this is all human. This is all what we go through. You know, this is, and it's your choice how you deal with it. That's, you know, pretty much the message in this book. And I wanted to just read a couple of questions so that you, do you want to know if you're emotionally free at this point? You know, in the beginning of the book, I wanted to ask a few questions just so that you can assess where you're at, you know, so that you can grow. All right, I'll just read you a couple of questions. If I'm angry with someone, I'll breathe and center myself before I react. How many of you? Mostly yes. Mostly no. How many of you mostly no? Okay. All right. When stuck in traffic or if something doesn't happen on my timetable, I have patience. Mostly yes. Mostly no. Okay. After a hard day, I focus on what I'm grateful for rather than beating myself up for what has gone wrong. Mostly yes. Mostly no. Honest. That's honest. But this is the starting point. You have to ask yourself these questions because these are goals. These are very worthwhile goals to have. You see, not to be ashamed of where you're at, but just to notice where you're at so that you can move towards the heart more and out of the head. The head is what causes you to get stuck. The heart is the wide open territory that you move towards in your life to the most, you know, to the end point of it and continue on with it. It's the goal. If my heart gets broken, I don't give up on love. Mostly yes. Who disagrees with that? Who's having a problem with that one? I don't give up on love. Anybody? Everybody believes. I don't seek revenge if someone treats me poorly. Mostly yes. Mostly no. You seek revenge. How funny. I don't compare myself to others. Mostly yes. I don't. Mostly yes. Mostly no. Okay. I have empathy for others, but I don't become their therapist or get drained by their emotional pain. This is important. Mostly yes. Mostly no. Who gets drained by other people's emotional pain? All right. This is. I'm going to talk about that tonight because that's something to shift. The shift. I'll get there quickly then. All right, this is a good one. I am good at setting limits with people who drain my energy. Mostly yes. Mostly no. Of all the no's, how many of you would like to learn how to set limits with people who drain your energy? That's a good goal. Yes, it happens all the time. It's all over the place, and it can affect your health tremendously. Okay, and so this is the starting point, but I think, you know, and you could go through all the questions and I tell you how to score it, but it's not, again, to beat yourself up. It's to see where you're at to move forward. You know, I ask myself all of this. This isn't for other people solely. This is for me. You know, I traveled around the country on book tour with this book, reading it to remind myself. As we all, the point is we all need reminders. We do. I mean, I have a passion for being free. I do not want to be imprisoned by my own negativity and fears and resentments or whatever it is. We all have our anxieties. Everybody has all these things. There's not one human being alive who doesn't have these things. All right? So equalize everyone. Don't put anyone up here or down here. We're all on the same level. And we're, you know, that's just about it. You know, we're all on the same level. But the great freedom comes from when you learn to work with yourself and work with the energies we call emotions. And so each chapter and the second part is how to transform emotions, such as how to transform fear with courage, how to transform patient frustration with patience. Patience is so beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Patience. It's really an attractive quality in people. No, and when you're looking for relationships, it's something to look for in people, as opposed to people who get angry or impatient with you. This person here. You've got to shift your priorities when you look for things in people for relationships. You know what I mean? Yeah. That patience is a good thing to look for, not those who get short or get angry and critical. Okay, or how to transform anger with compassion. That's so important. People, you know, have argued with me about that along the way. You know, that's of all the chapters in the book, that was the chapter that gave people the most trouble, some people the most trouble. Because one woman, or I forget if it was a woman or a man, but wrote me and said, "You don't understand human nature because it's not natural to try to transform anger with compassion. It's not human nature to do that." Isn't that interesting? And I really thought about that a lot. And I was thinking about why some people get angry when I talk about transforming anger with compassion. And what it is that people are very invested in being right. They would rather be right than change. It's a real block in all of us and other human beings. It's not just them. But notice when it happens to you, because you will be hurt, you will be betrayed, you will be disappointed. You'll be all those things. And it could be your beloved that's doing it. You know, you're going to be disappointed. It happens, you see. But whether or not you choose to hold on to that as a reason to close down is something else. You know, there's a story that I tell in here, and I love to tell it also, is, you know, a woman went to visit the Dalai Lama in India, and she was waiting for an audience with him and was sitting in a cafe. And in the cafe, she saw a man beating a dog. It was just horrifying, you know, it's horrifying. And she went to the Dalai Lama and said, "How do you reconcile this in your philosophy, a man beating a dog?" And he said, "I feel just as sorry for the man as I do for the dog." You know, if you can feel that, you know, to get to that place, it's beyond being right. You see, there's some kind of evolution that has to happen in us emotionally for us to progress and have any hope of finding peace. You see, and we have to start with ourselves, and that's why I present emotional freedom as an inner peace movement. Because when you can get beyond the need to be right, that's the ego, that's the mind, that's the part of you that's justified. Yes, you are right, you know, and you're justified in being angry. But it's also your choice to stretch. And I really mean stretch beyond it, because the mind doesn't want to. The mind wants to stay right, period. And it wants to stop there. And when you stop there, it's all over. It will never evolve. You stop there, it just won't get to another place. And it might feel unnatural, but it's expansive. And so what I'm asking in this book is to stretch beyond the mind to something that gets into the heart, that expands you, but it also allows you to create a sense of presence that ignites others because you've done the change. You see, if you talk about it, it won't do anything in helping others, really, it'll do something, but it won't do as much as you can do when you actually embody the change. As you see, when you work on these emotions in your own life, then you can free yourself little by little, and then you begin to radiate something. And other people might not know what they're picking up, you see, but it's something that will inspire them, because you've gotten to a point beyond where others are stuck, and you're not bragging about it. You're not, you know, nagging them about it. You're not doing anything but being and setting an example for your children, for your friends, for your coworkers. It's a very different kind of power that I'm talking about. But it takes the commitment to be able to transform what's inside that's negative or blocked or stopping you in little by little by little into something different. Do you kind of feel what I'm talking about? It's so liberating, and you can feel the change in yourself. You know, and the benefits for you are enormous, because it feels wonderful. You know, if you want to liberate, you know, when you have a block loosen up, it's quite a release. You have a massage and something goes, ah, That's it. There's more and more of those. And that's what you want. You want the lightness of being. You want less density inside of you. And the way to get there is to practice every single day on, you know, how to transform what's negative within you. All right. I could go on and on with that because, it's so powerful. If you can feel it, the mind will go, all right, that's interesting. But if you can feel what happens inside of you, you know, it's quite something, really. It's quite something if you want to awaken. You see, but it's scary. You go inside. A lot of people don't like to meditate because you close your eyes and guess what you find? And it is terrifying, really, the first time you go in and you hear that mind, what it does. Oh, my God. You know, but it's to be expected. And that's not all of who you are. You see, when you begin to get used to the silence of going inside and exploring the territory there, it's quite fascinating finding out who you are. You see, and when you do that and you begin to know yourself a little bit, then that's power. As you know what you're working with. And sometimes it is terrifying, you know, what's inside, but so what? You know, I don't really give fear that much rope. You know, I really don't. I'm not too enamored with it anymore. You know, it's just a little seductive because it's so loud. You see, just know that. But as you begin to go inside and get in touch with the stillness and get in touch with the heart, things begin to reprioritize because you see that love is the most powerful healing force in the universe. There's nothing that could compare with it. Nothing. Fear, hatred, nothing. It pales in the arms of love. It just pales. But you have to know that. It's not Pollyannish, it's not theoretical, you just have to know it. That's where I talk about intuition. You know, that knowing that comes, the mind will, you know, it can't grasp this. The mind can't know love, not fully, it can't, because love is ever expanding. It doesn't have a beginning and an end, it's constantly expanding. And the mind can't accept that, it wants to put it in a box. But love or death or anything in terms of the unseen, you must go into this thing I'm calling intuition and just begin to sense, you know, a little bit. Now, in the book, I talk about emotional types. And it's important to know your emotional type because then you can see your assets and what's not working for you so that you could begin to know yourself a little bit more. And it's just a structure. You know, it's just something to try and make sense out of who you are. And there are a couple of main emotional types. One is the intellectual. And the emotional type is the default type where you revert to during stress. It's just your basic nature of what you have become accustomed to and most comfortable with. And some people are most comfortable in their head. They're brilliant analyzers. They love to, you know, A plus B equals C. They love all kinds of analysis, you know. But when a mate comes to them and the mate is upset and they're, you know, going through something emotional, the intellectual will try and solve the problem, which is the worst possible thing to do in the beginning with an emotional mate, because then they'll feel unheard and it will just amp up the emotion. And so just a quick tip for intellectuals is just to, before you try and fix the problem, just say, I understand how you're feeling. Let it be. Give it breathing room and space. And then down the line a little bit, you can try and solve. You can help with it, but don't go too quickly into try and fix things, as that will aggravate your mate. That's a quick tip. All right, and the solution for the intellectual is to really let the mind blossom, but also know that there are other things, other states of mind you can shift into. The intuition, the body, the intellectual needs to do some yoga stretches or a little movement. Anything involved with the body is good for the intellectual to bring the sensory awareness down as opposed to up. The intellectual goes up this way, all right? And to balance out the intellectual, the energy needs to go down more into the lower part of the body to bring about more passion. But that's not you. You're not an intellectual. Yeah. Yeah, I know. All right, the second type is that I call the emotional empath, and this is also the type I am. The emotional empath is somebody who's intuitive and sensitive and open and caring and loving, but they tend to be an emotional sponge and take on the angst of the world into their own body and become exhausted, depressed, agitated, like a chameleon. If any of you saw the incredible Woody Allen movie, Zelig, it's an older movie. Any of you see that? Yeah, that's what it is. It's like the Woody Allen, when he was around the Orthodox Jewish rabbi, he became the Orthodox Jewish rabbi. And that's what emotional empaths are, because we're so porous. It's like holding something with 50 fingers instead of one. That's what it's like. Or like a patient of mine said, like a window opened in me that God never closed when I was born. Now, that people have all kinds of poetic interpretations of how it feels, but it's a definite type. If you tend to absorb what's going on, that could be a deterrent to really solidifying your sensitivity, because you're so overwhelmed and exhausted. And many empaths go around with chronic fatigue, diagnosis of chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, mystery aches and pains, and starts the search, the medical search, from doctor to doctor to doctor. And they're often called hypochondriacs, you know, meaning they're making it up. And this is the travesty of traditional medicine. They're making it up, that philosophy. It's so not true. Nobody's making up anything. It's our perception of the world. You see, but traditional medicine doesn't know about subtle energy, which is the chi, or the energy that goes through the body and extends beyond the body, the aura, the biofield, whatever you want to call it, shakti, prana. Every indigenous healing culture has a name for it, except traditional medicine, by the way. It's a little bit of arrogance, isn't it? You see, but it's the limitation of the linear mind, because the linear mind can't get it. Thinks it's woo-woo. But the intuition can sense it. If the linear mind people can just get out of their heads for a little bit and sense with their bodies, they don't have to take anyone's word for it. They can get a sense of other people. You see, but the mind doesn't allow for that. You see, but the intuition and the empath has all that going. And as children, they come into the world as infants. You know, if you have ever seen births, which is such an incredible thing, some babies come in, you can just see how they're absorbing everything. And others come with a kind of barrier around them. It's different. You know, they come in different, but empaths usually come in with this very absorbent quality. And if they're not educated, if their parents don't educate them, then it can be the difficult childhood. So I remember as a child, I couldn't go into shopping malls or crowded places because I would get so overwhelmed. I would feel fine going in, and then when I came out, I would be exhausted or with some ache or pain I didn't have before, or anxious or depressed or something I wasn't before. And so I just knew to avoid these places, and I didn't realize that what was happening was that I was just absorbing in crowds. There are all this energy, energy fields overlap, and to an empath who's open to everything, you sense everybody, you know, and there's a lot of anger and a lot of depression and a lot of pain floating around in crowds. And if you're an empath, and as a child, you pick it up and you have no idea what happened to you. You know, so it's important for parents to really educate their children about this so that they have skills early on in how to handle it. And unlike me, I had to figure it out. You know, as nobody told me this. My mother just said, oh, no, dear, you just don't have a thick enough skin. Which is not the case. It's not a matter of a thicker skin. It's a matter of learning skills to center and ground yourself and set limits and boundaries so you don't absorb. You see, it's all, they have it backwards, and it's too bad because a lot of people suffer because of it. But let me just read you a couple of questions just to see if you are an empath. These are very typical questions. Have I been labeled as overly sensitive all my life? How many of you? Yeah, yes. If a friend is distraught, do I start feeling it too? Yeah, a lot of empaths in here. Am I emotionally drained by crowds and require time alone to revive myself? Yes, empaths always want to go home. Now, as opposed to other types, empaths revive themselves alone. This is something just to understand about yourself and for your loved ones to understand about you and not continually pressure you to be amongst people when you need to be alone. Now, it really helps to know this about yourself so you know how to communicate with people around you to express your needs. Do my nerves get frayed by noise, smells, or excessive talking? How many? Yes, the smells. The empath has an especially acute sense of smell. Those who have it know. You could go into an elevator with perfume in it, and it feels like you're being nuked. It is. And another person who's not an empath will say, oh, God, that smells good. And you're get me out of here. It's a different perception. It's not better or worse. It's just different. And it's something to respect in one another. Do I prefer taking my own car places so that I can leave when I please? This is really a big sign. Yeah. And do I overeat to cope with emotional stress? Oh, and this is very important. Am I afraid of being engulfed by intimate relationships? It's not you.
I've been married for 20
years. Yeah. I'm there. Yes, some things sensitize you more to it. If I'm tired, if I'm hungry, if I'm in pain, if I'm sick, you know, any of those things could make it so much worse. And so in those times, I know to really take care of myself. Empaths really need to have wonderful self-care so that moment to moment you could know what your needs are. Yes, and you could say to yourself, I've had enough. I need to go home. I need to quiet down. I need to decompress. Empaths need a lot of time to decompress, and then they're fine. No, if they know that they could go home or go to a place or go to a room or even a bathroom, I take refuge in bathrooms. I take anything I can get because I travel a lot, you know, and teach. And so in airports, the hardest places for me, it's so loud, you know, and it's just very assaultive to my senses going to an airport. And so I go into the bathroom frequently and just close the stall. They don't know what you do. You know, so don't worry about them. They're not even thinking about you. And I sit there and I do the 3-minute meditation I suggest in the book, which is breathing, centering, focusing on the heart, bringing myself back to what I know and love and prioritize and connects me with myself and my heart and brings me back. I've learned to bring myself back to center so I could go out in that airport again and be good. You see, but it takes that temporary shift for me being alone or within any border. You know, it has to do with borders for me where I need to be closed off. You know, even the bathroom. You know, there's 4 walls there. You know, nobody can see me. I'm not, you know, I'm separate. And that's a great solace to an empath. So just for you to know that. As I know, sometimes empaths are ashamed of all this and they think they're neurotic and they've been called all these derogatory names, you know. And it isn't so. And the reason it's important to identify if you're an empath and to also learn to take care of yourself is that the upside to being an empath is that you have deep compassion and intuition for all things. And you're able to deeply experience the world and other people. And you're able to explore the unseen realms in such a sensual, powerful, passionate, exploratory way that is never ending. You know, I would never want to give it up. Oh, I wouldn't. But I've really learned how to work with myself through meditation, through setting limits and boundaries with others, knowing that no is a complete sentence. No, you know, feeling good about saying, no, I'm really too tired to even listen to you right now. Because the listening is something that has a limit for me. I can't listen endlessly. You know, I need to have the quiet. There's too much noise. I'm very sensitive to noise, and I have a quota. And I know when I reach it. And then I just excuse myself. And that's why I like to bring my car places, because other emotional types love to socialize. They'll stay there 5 hours, 6 hours talking. And for me, I can maybe go 3. And then I could love you madly, but I'm done. And I feel it. It's like being done. It's like I've reached my limit. It has to do with stimulation in a certain sense. No, but I've reached a limit, and I'm, okay, fine. You've reached a limit. Go home. Then if other people take offense, just tell them about yourself. They won't. It's not personal. And with a mate, in order to coexist in the same house, if you want to have a relationship and live with somebody, you have to talk about this with them. Because otherwise you're going to be stuck in some kind of, you know, old paradigm relationship where you have to be in the same space with them all the time. And that never works for an empath. That makes them very anxious because they can't get away. And so the mate has to understand it's not personal. You see, so all of this is, you know, it's very interesting, the kind of creative conversations that you can have. And I counsel my patients to do this. It is so liberating. Because once an empath knows how to speak up about all this, they can be in a very loving, wonderful relationship, and they can have the doors shut, and they can sleep separately if they want. No, because the empath sometimes needs to sleep alone. These are just special needs, you know, that you have to explain to your mate, and it takes, you know, love and kindness and compassion. But then you get to experience, you know, the great gift of relationship. Depends what you want. You know, just totally, I mean, you don't have to, but it just depends what you want. So that's an empath. All right, are there any questions about that? I just want to, you had a hand up almost. Were you just moving your arm? Yeah.
I have a comment. I used to think of this in terms of extrovert and introvert.
Yeah.
And I tend to be an introvert, and I have a sister who's an extrovert who will follow you into the bathroom with a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of a classic.
Right. Yeah, and so you just have to educate the other person. You know, I had a woman who came to one of my workshops who was a mother, and she had, you know, young children, and she couldn't get away anywhere. I said, well, go in the bathroom. She says, when I go in the bathroom, I see little fingers coming under the door. It's true. It's hard when you're a young mother. A lot of demands, yeah. Yeah, you could be a mix, but these types are just a kind of a default setting, you know, where you go to. But what I'm suggesting in the book is to take the best of all types and integrate them.
Is there more types?
Yeah, I got stuck on this one because it's quite relevant to people. Yes, but to integrate the intellect, you see, what happens with traditional medicine is that they think you have to be either or. That you can't be everything. You can't be both. And that's so not true. That's the linear thinking. But what I'm saying, the holistic, integral, integrative, whatever, is that you can be everything. Just pick and choose. Be discerning when you want to be intellectual, when you're tuning in, when you're sharing, when you're being silent. You can do all of it. But under stress, you tend to revert to a particular type. It's just important to know so you can optimize the positive points and begin to heal the points that aren't working for you. That's the reason to know. It's just more self-awareness. But let me just quickly go on. I'll get back to you, to the other types so I don't forget them. It's the gusher. And the gusher is somebody who is very emotive and loves to share and feels something. Feels something. And loves to express it and picks up the phone immediately to tell a friend. You know, I'm part gusher. I'm a big sharer. I love sharing. But the downside to a gusher is that you can overshare and give too much information. And in the shopping mall, or you could go up to some stranger and tell them your life story. You know, or they could grab you, you know, and that's not balanced. You see, so the gusher needs to learn to go inside and ask the intuition first before picking up the phone. That's the balance of that. That's too much talking, too much sharing is oppressive. You could feel it. See, but there's a balance. You see, the thing is there's a balance, and you have to sense the balance. You know, really sense it. And if it's too much this way, then you bring it back. You have to tweak it, you know, at various points. And then the last type is the rock, and this is somebody who's strong and steady and there for you and dependable and will show up, an amazing quality. They'll show up for you. Very important quality in a person, this woman, to look for in, yes, you. No, I'm not quite, I'm just making a comment about qualities in a relationship to look for. What?
About the mother?
to the boundaries. You've got to set some boundaries and separate a little. As you take her opinion so seriously. Yeah, of course you do. She's your mother. It's time to separate. Little, not a lot. You know, balance. It's a little space between. What if you what?
Because I just had this with my mother the last 3 days. And we were...
If you what?
We're too much alike.
Well, you're always like your mother.
But you don't like what you... You don't like your mother. And
well, that's always so, that we're like our mothers and we embody the worst that are. We always want to be opposite of them, but we end up being like them. You see, but you know, with emotional freedom, you look at that and you say, my mother, myself, I'm going to evolve. I'm going past this. You know, I see that I'm like her, but I'm going to work with myself so that I don't criticize, so I don't beat myself up, you know, so I don't do this. You have to work with yourself. That's what emotional freedom is. It's not like a death sentence. You know, you're going to be like your mother forever. But it takes awareness and courage to say, yes, I'm like her. Exactly what I don't want to be, I'm doing. You know, be compassionate. Of course you are. But then shift. You know, if you're treating your mate as your mother treated you, take a breath. Now shift. That's the freedom to say no to it. And at the same time, being compassionate with yourself that you are like her. Of course, you know, when you raise children and mothers, it's like little chick and the duck. You know, you emulate the mother. Of course you do. But with emotional freedom, you transcend and you go further than the mother. You can.
I know, but
it was?
I just
I'm not talking about your mother changing.
No, I know, but it makes me sad that she thought that was about me and judgment. That's okay.
I mean, it's so rich. It's so rich. See it that way. Rich. This is your opportunity. Of course it's sad. But keep going. Keep believe in the heart. You do it for your own evolution. You deserve that. You see, you don't want to be stuck in the old patterns. And the mother and father present the old patterns to you. You take the good and you discard the rest. And then they go. They're not around forever. They're teachers, parents. Now, some good, some bad, but you learn from it all. That's the whole point, is you learn from it all. That's what emotional freedom is not being a victim, but saying, all right, this is what I've been given. How can I work with it to free myself instead of fighting? I don't want this. You know, I don't want this. It's not fair I got this. I would rather have this. It doesn't work that way. You're given what you're given, and it's up to you to accept and work with it. That's emotional freedom. And then when you feel the liberation of that, you see some of the positive things that can happen. You know, then you're really given a lot of reinforcement to go further. But this is where intuition comes in. You know, all the emotions that we have, they're very seductive, getting lost in all of those. And that's why it's important to learn how to center yourself with the meditations I talk about in here when you get lost. I don't know your name. But when you get caught in the mire of all that emotion, you have to come back to center to a neutral place. So it doesn't take you. What?
Yeah, I just see her getting older too. I'm sorry.
It's of course she's. Yes. Yes. It's inevitable. But it's about your growth. This is your opportunity. And it's so important to get help and guidance. We can't do this alone. This is too intense. You know, these things that come up, if you're honest with yourself, you know, and you're really passionate and you're really there in a relationship, so much comes up. I mean, I've been in psychotherapy most of my adult life because I'm really passionate about working with what's in me. And I get overwhelmed. You know, sometimes it's too much. That's why I need help. We all need help. Don't be ashamed to ask for it. You know, we all need help. That's the good thing. You see, you just have to find the right help and wise guidance so that it can keep you on course. When you go off, you always go off course. You know, but as you get to know yourself more, the more you can recalibrate and come back to center because you know what center is. If you don't know what center is, then that's difficult. First, you have to find center. But once you get a sense of that, you can return. That's why I'm such a big believer in the practice of meditation, where even taking 3 minutes or 1 minute or 30 seconds out just to close your eyes and take a breath, put your hand on your heart, and just breathe. Just to do that, even for 10 seconds, 1 second, just do it. Because it's sometimes like turning the Titanic to get there. Really. I mean, I know. But, you know, meditation is my main practice. So it's something I feel very strongly about. I have an altar at home, and I sit a lot, and I light my candles because I love candles. Does anyone like candles? That can help meditation. You can make it easier to light the candles. You know, or burn incense or have flowers, whatever it is you love there. But you've got to sit there and learn how to come back to yourself. You see, that's basic mental health, spiritual health, is learning how to come back to center. We're not taught that, are we? I mean, children need to be taught this. How, when they get chaotic and upset, how do they come back to center? I mean, I have friends who have raised their children this way, and I've seen what happens. They grow up very centered, very confident. They don't talk about it a lot, but they know what to do. They know how to come back to themselves. That's what I'm trying to, you know, express in this book, and it's what I practice, you know, passionately. And I get thrown off, come back to center, get thrown off, come back to center. That's what it's all about. You see, and the stronger you get, the better it is. In my way, in terms of my practice, is to be vulnerable and strong. It's not to protect. So it's just my way. I mean, there are other techniques in here that I talk about that are more protective, where you can visualize shields around you if you're around negative energy or negativity and you don't want to take it on. You can visualize a protective barrier between you and what is sitting next to you. Let's say at a family dinner. You can do that. And therapists use it a lot. If they're around a lot of, you know, difficulty or toxicity and they feel overwhelmed, they use this shield. It isn't my way because it's not my practice. It's I develop it a different way. I've always been taught to develop a very strong center, like a tree and roots. And over the years, strong, strong, strong from the inside, but not defending. But that's just what appeals to me. It's not better or worse. It's just my way. But you need to learn techniques. You need to find your way. And that's what emotional freedom is about. And that's what tuning into intuition is about, to sense what feels right. Not what society says is right, not what your mother says is right, not what your friends poll as right, but what you feel is right. You have to know that. And if you don't know that, then there are difficulties. Now, then you come into difficulties. All right, is there any questions? Okay, yes, you. Speak up.
Yeah, I was actually dating a psychiatrist in L.A. for about 3 years. And then she took a self-assertion class one day. And we went to dinner that evening, and she did the self. I was ready to break up with her, and then she changed. She cut it off because she saw how I was reacting with her, and we got along well right after that. And when I date women, they're very smart, and they don't come out with "I don't want to do this" and "I'm selfish." They know how to handle me, and the smart women can do that. And I think that's very important for relations, and just say no, and I want to be by myself.
It is very important.
It's a man's thing and a woman's thing you're talking about. And a lot of the things you mentioned, I think, like, they're the women's things and they're not men's things. Could you maybe comment? Like, you know, John Gray comments about that.
Yeah,
you can't give
true.
A woman advice, and that's right. But what about the man's thing and the woman's thing and how to keep a good relationship going and not be so direct?
To me, it's a matter of intuition. I mean, we each have male and female within us. You see, but you have to see what feels best for you. If it feels good for you to set those boundaries, then you must do it. No, I don't want to make it a sex thing, although you could. I don't want to tonight. I want to make it just a matter of tuning in and seeing what's comfortable for yourself. Now try and look at it that way. Yeah, back there.
Hi. I'm extremely sensitive, and I've always believed that love answers all. You know, I've just always lived that way. And sometimes it's extremely challenging to stay in that place, especially right. when you're around the negativity.
Right.
And my experience is if I stay there long enough, things do transform for other people or change. But how do I deal with the influx of negative feedback, I guess, of what I'm feeling and not go into fear?
Feedback about what?
I would say there's like a sense that I feel that it's dark, negative.
From who?
If I'm in a situation with somebody, you know, just to be specific, somebody that I just finally got into a rehab center, and I stayed in the place of love through all of it, and there was some harsh things that were hitting me from them, but I just knew that I had to rise above it and
all
stay
right,
in the place
of
love.
Let me just say something. It's never acceptable for abuse or anything. That's not acceptable. You have to learn what your boundaries are. Love conquers all doesn't mean staying with somebody who's beating you. That is not good. You must be around supportive, loving people. All right, and I think I would look at it that way right now. So love doesn't mean staying with an abuser and being compassionate because you know how much he's suffering. No. It means getting away and saying no to that abuser. You see, so I think you go too far over. You've got to be smart. You could unconditionally love this person and say, I know he's suffering, and I know he's been through this, and I know blah, 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 and namaste. I respect the spirit within you, but I'm leaving. It's not okay with me. This isn't good for me. But that doesn't mean you can't have respect for what he's going through. You just don't put yourself there. Don't put yourself there. I mean, have that be your lesson for the next month, at least. Okay, yeah. Right. It's, you know, there are all kinds of names for it, but it's like in martial arts, it's this point here, Dantian. There's a place in your middle that you need to return to, and it creates an arrow effect where instead of dispersing energy, it brings everything, congeals everything into a powerful place. That's what happens with emotions and with life and chaos is that things tend to disperse and then you get you know, chaotic and off-center. So that's why you need to stop periodically throughout the day when you notice that, bring it back, and then go back into the situation. You see, that's a life skill. It's important to do that. And as you do it more, you can do it quicker. Yeah.
Hi. I'm currently reading your first book, and I'm up to the section where you start meditating. But of all your books, for an empath, the one that you're right now, is this the ideal book to read?
It's a good one. But that's a good one, too.
It is. Okay. I just wasn't sure if I should just jump
that's
to the
nice.
Latest one. So.
No, that's a nice question. Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. Stay with that, then go to the other one. Do one at a time. Yeah.
I just have a question regarding the gushers. I don't know what that's about, but I tend to attract them, and they just come and find me anywhere. And
that's right.
A lot of times when they're talking to me, I'm already inside because I guess that's my defense mechanism. What I want to know is how to move them along. And, I try not to attract them. I mean, I've been actually consciously working on that, but they still find me.
Of course they do. They find the people with the open hearts. Of course. And one thing to try, and you'll see it won't work, but it's an interesting experiment. Just take a few steps backwards.
Okay.
And see what happens. What do you think happens?
They move forward. Yeah, and that's another thing. They're always in your space.
That's
another. So my question is, how do you get them to move on? Or, I mean, these are people I don't even know. I've never seen before. And by the time they're
right.
done,
that's
I never
right.
want to see them again.
That's how it works. You need to speak up.
Just say I've had enough?
No. Well, not really. But when you go to the chapter on emotional vampires in this book, and you have to notice, okay, I'm around a gusher. What is my challenge here? My challenge is to speak up. Maybe I couldn't in the past for whatever reasons, but now my challenge is to speak up in a kind but firm way and set limits and end it. And it could be if they get you on the phone and they go on and on for 2 hours gushing, you have to say, you know, I love you, you're my friend, but I can only listen for a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. But you say it in a way that you're giving them a gift. Mm-hmm. You know, you say it, the tone of your voice, I hope you remember this, is so powerful. It's how you say something that allows somebody to hear it. All right, if you say, I wish you'd just keep quiet, you know, that won't get you anywhere. But if you say, you know, I know this is really important to you, but I can only listen for a couple minutes, I'm tired, or, I, if you want to get into solutions, it's a different story, but I can only listen, or I'm just too tired to listen now, or whatever you say. But you say it matter of fact, but you know, you're swift with your movement. You're swift. Now, I once had a boyfriend who was from the South, and he was so beautiful the way he did it. He, you know, he would say to people, you know, I'm sorry, I just can't do that. And they'd be smiling at him. The way he'd say it, his voice was so melodious, and he was a poet, you know, so it would come out really good. But you have to practice. Yes. Anybody else? Any other questions? Right here.
What happens when you find yourself being the emotional vampire?
Yeah, there's a quiz in here. What if you're the emotional vampire?
Yeah,
we all are. We all can be. But what you do when you notice yourself, you know, complaining or criticizing or controlling or whatever you do, whatever we all do, you catch yourself quickly and you say, okay, you could ask your loved one, what am I doing that's draining you, or how can I shift out of this?
Well, I do that all the time, but maybe too much.
You do what?
I ask all the time. Am I?
You what?
Am I bombarding you with, you know, my questions? Am I asking?
Well, that's insecurity.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing.
That's different.
You have a book on that.
Else.
I think I might be a gusher. Sorry, but what if when you're trying to get centered and get to know yourself, but you are so much into the victim judge? It's just hard to get quiet enough to center, I guess. Is that meditation?
Yeah. Do you like rocks? I mean, a rock's the kind you hold. Do you like them? Just go find a rock, a nice rock. Put it in your hand, and it can be like your mantra reminder of coming back. And be very gentle with yourself, and be very happy if you can come back even for a few seconds. Don't beat yourself because you're not there long enough. Go but get find a rock. Now they're talismans. They're talismans. Sometimes you hold a gemstone, sometimes you hold a rock, something that's a reminder, or something that you say in your own mind, a mantra, let it be, or whatever you have, om, or whatever is meaningful to you. But for you, I just thought that might be nice to hold something, because you like to hold things. See if you like it. If you don't like it, don't do it. Now, the point is, no matter what I say, no matter what anyone says, you try it and see if it works for you. If it doesn't work, forget it. Yeah, do you have a question?
In these economic times, there's a lot of financial upheaval and insecurity. How do you go away from the fear?
Fear of financial upheaval?
With all these things going on, how do you not go into the fear of, oh, my God, what's going to happen to me? Am I going to be on the street? Am I going to ever have another job? Am I going to...
Right. Well, you, the mind goes there, of course, it's natural. But what you have to do is bring yourself back to the moment and not allow the mind the indulgence of moving forward in the future. Because when you go in the future, it fuels the fear and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And as much as you can to focus on the good works in the moment and positive baby steps forward now and giving yourself credit for those, that shifts the energy. And it distracts the mind from fear to bring yourself more back to the present, to work with it. And you do that over and over and over again. And then you begin to see the change. And also tune into your intuition for creative solutions. I worked with one woman who was so afraid. She'd lost her job. She was just so full of worry and fear. And so for a while, I was able to get her to find her center. And in that center, in that silence, she had a flash to look in a newspaper she'd never looked in before. And she went there, and she was there. She found her job. You see, you won't find a job if you're in the fear. You'll find a job if you come from your intuition. So I hope this is, we're just about to end. So I hope that gives you a taste of, you know, of what I'm teaching right now. And I just wanted to tell you my website, too. It's drjudithorloff.com. And there are lots of workshops and free videos and free articles and blogs and all kinds of things for you. Yeah. On Ron Owens today?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
It was really good. Oh, how many of you heard that today, Ron Owens? I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome. I also want to note, I have a mailing list in my purse that I'm going to take out. For those of you who'd like to be on my newsletter, you can just put your email address there. And I want to thank you, the Commonwealth Club, okay, for having me here. I've really enjoyed it today, both lectures.
Thank you. Well, our thanks to our distinguished speaker, Dr. Judith Orloff. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.